You want to talk soccer? Talking non-stop soccer talk. This is the show for you. This is TFC Pitchside on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Via Stadium in San Jose, California for tonight's game between Toronto FC and the San Jose Earthquakes. A beautiful summer evening in San Jose. It never rains in California, at least not in the summertime. And they're working hard and winning the foul. Referee looked like he was going for a card there for a moment.
He does get a lot of the foot of Endo. There's no question about that. For me, it's not a red card.
And this is the first moment of controversy, and it has Wondolowski and San Jose in scent. And there's a ball in front and in! It was Mora who tapped it in. He scored again, the defender, and it's 1-1. Endo goes down again, and that draws another card. And that's a red because it's the second yellow. San Jose trying to launch a counterattack here. Simon Dawkins working to get a shot away. Simon Dawkins has scored!
We did a lot of defending on Wednesday in Columbus, and it's important here that we stay mobile when we have possession and we keep it moving, and that we are able at times to dictate the game a little bit with the ball.
It's a sea of red. This is TFC Pitchside with Dan Riccio and Thomas Michalakos.
Thank you, big voice dude. And it is a somber TFC Pitchside Monday. The Reds losing 2-1 in San Jose. Now, in a vacuum, that wouldn't seem like that bad of a result. Right, Thomas?
No, but we have to explain in a little more detail why.
TFC now in the MLS history books.
And not for a good reason.
No. As Jerry Dobson said on the call there, doesn't rain often in the summer in California, but it was raining red cards for San Jose on Saturday.
Yeah, and for once, it actually went to TFC's advantage.
It did. And two red cards.
And they couldn't come up with the 3 points.
Two red cards.
The soccer gods were smiling.
Two red cards. I don't know how many more times I have to say it. It's still sinking in. Anibal Godoy in the 42nd minute with San Jose up 1-0 thanks to former TFC man Quincy Amirakwa. 44th minute, TFC immediately respond. Justin Morrow, his third goal in his last four appearances. And it makes the last six TFC goals all coming from Justin Morrow or Jordan Hamilton. Then in the 53rd minute, game still tied up at one, Alberto Quintero sent off. Straight red card.
How bad were those cards?
And in the 70th minute, Simon Dawkins, former Spurs man of the San Jose Earthquakes, scores the game winner for the Quakes as TFC could not muster much against the nine men in the box for San Jose. And that's really your game recap.
And you have to do better than that. You can't allow a result like that to slip away from when you're handed a gift on a silver platter by an incompetent official, which is the growing theme in the MLS.
Alejandro Mariscal hasn't reffed a pro game since 2010, and I believe this was his second MLS game.
And, you know, I'm not for anyone losing their jobs, but hopefully this will be his last.
And I know you kind of put a note here on our lineup that says, yet again, MLS ref takes center stage, but this time it doesn't influence the result. I don't think he takes center stage. Maybe from a San Jose perspective, he takes a little bit of a center stage.
He did. But then in the
end, from a TFC perspective, you don't even care about the ref. You care about the team not getting anything from a game where you were up two men for 37 minutes.
Well, TFC have dropped points because of these referee errors
right
in the past this season. And this was a perfect opportunity to say, hey, the ball's actually bouncing our way tonight, guys. It's coming our way. We're getting the calls. And nothing. Didn't even show. To me, they didn't even show up.
No, I think they showed up.
Well, they were physically there, but mentally, I don't know.
I kind of understand.
Don't sugarcoat it.
I do agree with Greg Vanney to a certain extent. And he said, and he's going to join us on the show today. And so will Justin Morrow, by the way. But as for Greg Vanney, after the game, he said he was less upset about the team not scoring a goal and more upset that they gave up a goal. And not just that it's a blunder from Alex Bono, but just the fact that how does a nine-man team even make their way down the field to take a shot at goal?
First of all, when you replay that goal and you watch it again,
yeah,
you will clearly see San Jose's running with two players
right
against four TFC defenders. And to allow one player to find a way to wiggle around, and what you were seeing was those tactics and those challenges that coaches hate from their defenders, forwards, midfielders, whatever. Don't commit. Don't commit to a fake. Don't commit your entire body. And from what it seemed to me, it looked like they were gassed, which doesn't make any sense considering they're up two men. Why are you gassed? But Betashur was real, like on that play when he got turned, it just seemed to me that the defenders were passing the buck, and we've seen this lately over and over. Everyone's thinking the other guy is going to cover the opponent and no one does anything. You want to see your defenders play aggressive. Where are your balls? Go out after him. If you're going to allow a foul, okay, allow
Swarm
a foul.
Swarm him. Yeah. Gang tackle.
Yeah.
Anything. Two or three guys.
If you're going to allow a foul.
Even if you have to foul him.
Yeah. It's not what you want, but don't let him just walk in and take a shot like that. And it wasn't even a hard shot. Alex Bono has to make that save. And I'll tell you right now, he's still feeling that. This is one of those goals that will rest on a keeper's mind forever long as it can, till he can shake it off. We're really going to see what kind of mentality he has moving forward.
And we'll ask Greg Vanney in a little bit if there's any decision to be made in goal, whether TFC switched to Quillen Roberts for the Saturday home game against DC United. And I know, like, even if you have to foul him in that situation,
you have to do something. Don't let him take a shot.
It's a bit dangerous because anything that could be seen somewhat borderline, maybe Mariscal is looking to just hand out another red card and
just to even the score
and make a makeup call. Possibly, you don't know. That's how badly the game was being officiated. But you have to do something, and certainly more than they did. It's not to let Bono off the hook.
No, he has to make that save.
It's to add more blame because there's no way that even a shot should be on goal, should be directed at goal by the opposition when they have nine men.
Like I said, the first mistake was just sticking your leg out and challenging. Like lazy challenges, allowing Dawkins to go around you. And number two, if you ever played the game, your coach will always say the same thing. Never let the shooter cut into the center. So not only did they do these lazy challenges and letting them go around them, but they let the guy cut into the center of the ball. Like, if it was a really good shot, you can't blame Bono on
that. It's another reoccurring theme, right? Kwadwo Poku for New York City FC.
Over
Pedro
and over
Morales.
Again.
We've seen it too many times
you
recently.
You can't cut into the center and take a shot. You can't allow that to happen.
Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitchside recapping an embarrassing loss. It's fair to say 2-1 to San Jose, who are down to nine men. It is the 11th time in MLS history that a team with nine men has won a game. The last time it happened was Philadelphia beating Chivas USA 1-0 on April 21st, 2012. The last team to score the game-winning goal with nine men to their opponent's 11 was the Dallas Burn on August 7th, 2004. Eddie Johnson converting a PK in the 91st to secure a 1-0 win over Colorado.
Good old Eddie. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Right? So I don't want to make excuses for TFC in this case.
We don't need to.
And
we don't need to.
I want people to know that we're not trying to make excuses. We are trying to give you the full story. I was in Columbus on Wednesday. When we got to the stadium, it was a bloody heat box.
Was it bad?
You should have seen. Producer Emil Delich was down on the field taking photos. He was drenched. It was 40 degrees Celsius on the pitch.
I've never been to Columbus. It's that hot, eh?
It was a burner. It was hot. Again, this isn't to make excuses, but TFC have played 8 games in the last 28 days.
Did you have to share a car with him afterwards?
Yes.
Yeah.
We drove Stinking right back car. To Toronto right after the game. 8 games in 28 days for TFC. And in the dressing room afterwards, talking to Jonathan Osorio and talking to some of the other guys in the room, you could tell that heat wore pretty heavily on them, already being tired with all the travel and all the games recently.
Every team has to go through that, though.
Exactly. Every team has to go through it, but it's compounded by the fact that TFC don't have a lot of numbers right now with all the injuries. And you're not getting a lot of time to give guys days off here and there. Also, Shea Rue, like all these guys are playing every single game.
I hear what you're selling, but I ain't buying it.
Yeah.
I ain't buying it at all. And I know you're trying, and you're trying to get... As a human being, you're trying to give them the benefit of the doubt a little bit.
No.
Just a little.
My point is, I don't think fatigue is an excuse for what happened on Saturday night. Because there is no circumstance where you're up two men in a game that you should not come out the victors.
Especially when you bounce back so quickly after being up a man.
That's the thing, though. It is part of the story. The fact that you have Jay Chapman, who has played well recently but didn't have a great game on Saturday. Who did? You have Oso playing way too many minutes. Looks like he needs a day off. Endo, who we've seen Greg Vanney talk about his engine and how much he runs in games and having to take him off, right? The Siggy Schmid one against Seattle when Siggy was like, oh, I was so happy when they took off Endo. And Vanney was like, no, he was tiring. And we need to get some fresh legs out there. These are all different types of elements. You also released Damian Parkey, although that's kind of the way it is.
Here's the thing with that. What I saw on Saturday was a team without any answers. All you saw, and what we have seen for a while now, is Giovinco getting frustrated and going, you know what? I'm going to do this myself. And trying and trying and trying. Got to give it to the little guy. He's trying. He's trying to do something, creating something from nothing. And the reason why he has to do that.
He's also taking too many shots from outside the box. Too many shots that are going wide.
Or
too many shots that are being blocked.
Saved by the keeper.
Too many shots getting blocked. I'd love to get a hand on some Opta stats that show how many Giovinco shots have been blocked this year.
He's probably setting a record already.
Yeah.
Here's my point with that. He gets so frustrated that he decides to do it on his own, try to create something from nothing. Because the other option is crosses to no one.
The only option that they had, the only option that they were showing that they had on Saturday was get the ball out to the right wing where Tsubasa Endo was and
pump it across and see what happens.
And you know what? There was one moment where Endo took on the left back one-on-one, got by him, and then took a shot. But why not do that again? It was something that worked. It was something that made San Jose work. It was something that had a brief moment where San Jose didn't look comfortable. And he probably shouldn't have taken that shot. He probably should have cut it back into the top of the box. But at the same time, you're saying all this, how many more options do you have? After they scored the second goal, they packed everybody into the 18-yard box. Everybody they had on the pitch was in their 18.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything like that.
So how else are you supposed to break them down?
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I was going to tell you about you were talking about fatigue. Fatigue is not only a physical thing. Fatigue is a mental thing. And when your legs aren't going, your mind's going to get delirious. Your mind's not going to go either. And I just found it that if they were fatigued, and if we're going to use that,
it's a mental fatigue because they
were making all the wrong choices on the pitch.
We're also going to ask Greg Vanney about this in the fatigue factor. I'm not making it an excuse. It's part of the story.
Yeah, of course. No, I understand why you're saying it, but I'm just, to the listeners, it's not a physical fatigue. It was a mental one because when you're looking at those players making those poor judgments time and time again and the frustrations building and building and building and building, what do you expect?
What do you
expect but laying an egg like that? Because this is a game that you just want to forget because There's no point in analyzing this even further because it was just horrible from top to bottom.
It was bad, and it started bad for TFC. San Jose got on the front foot. They scored the first goal, and they were
Did
given...
Did you see the problem with that first goal? Amirakwa. Is anyone marking him? Again, a growing theme, the same thing over and over again.
To me, that was San Jose, and it was maybe a glaring issue early on in the game. San Jose was getting a lot of chances on the wings and getting crosses into the box.
The diamond
wasn't seemingly working early on for TFC in that game.
There's no reason why a player of the opposing team is left alone in your six to get a touch on that ball. One defender, there's got to be some kind of communication there to cover him because it's not the first time. We see this over and over. There's always a guy wide open for an easy touch or a shot or anything of that matter.
Dan Rizzo, Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitch Side. Again, was in Columbus on Wednesday and also on Saturday night. I did pre, half, and post here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And I got to say,
how was that?
I don't think TFC Twitter has ever been quite so, to use a word the kids say these days, lit after the Saturday night loss. And I was, you know, going into it, we weren't planning on taking phone calls after the game, but it was worthy of taking phone calls. And certainly we did get a couple and didn't have enough time to take more than that. But I know on Twitter, a lot of you were wishing that we had more time. People got extremely disrespectful on Twitter.
Well, there's plenty
not just towards TFC's coach, Greg Vanney, who is a human being, and also the man who runs TFC's Twitter account, whom we happen to know very well. He actually sent out a tweet. I won't say his name, but you know him from watching any videos on TFC.ca. But he said on Twitter, he said, you know, there's a human on the end of your at mentions.
Yeah.
Referring to
a living, breathing human being.
The vitriol that was going towards Toronto FC's Twitter account.
Yeah. Me and Emil even ate some of that. Horrible.
That's what I mean. Disrespectful and a little bit racist is a good way.
Well,
of putting
I wouldn't
it.
Say racist, just ignorant.
Yeah.
I was called a dumb Greek and let it be known to all of you that I was born in Canada, so I'm Canadian. So, yeah. So it's listening to those type of fans. I wouldn't even call them fans. Armchair managers. Everyone has the answers. Fire the manager. Get rid of him. He's horrible. He's this. He's that. TFC haven't had a manager to stay longer than 2 years.
Right.
Do you think that could be the reason why they're so bad, or one of the reasons that instantly when things go bad, everyone just reacts from emotion, kind of like Donald Trump. It's very what you're feeling at this moment. This is what I'm going to say without really looking into logically why you're saying what you're saying. Calling for Greg Vanney to be sacked is by far the dumbest. I want to use another word, but I'm not going to. It's really dumb. And why you're saying it, when you're giving the reasons, they also are dumb. Really dumb. Moronic.
There are a lot of people with these opinions, though, and we'll get more into this in just a little bit.
You're all dumb. I'm going to say it. I don't care.
Do want to tell you, though, this. Mentioned stuff about Sebastian Giovinco not getting enough shots on goal this year. Producer Emil Delic just handing me this stat. Last season, 40% of the shots Giovinco took hit the target. This season, so far, that is down to 30%.
I really want to get a number on the block shots.
It's a lot.
It has to be 100, don't you think?
It's up there. It's definitely up there. Dan Rizzo, Thomas Michalakos, this is TFC Pitch Side. We are now happy to be joined by the head coach of your Toronto FC. It is Greg Vanney. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for doing this today. I can't imagine that was a very fun flight home on Saturday night.
No, it was disappointing. I mean, you know, to start the game and going into San Jose, we knew, given the week and the travel and everything, that we were going to have our challenges, that we were going to have to play well and dig deep to get a result. But as in all games, the circumstances take their changes and go their different ways, and we found ourselves in a position to really try to benefit from the circumstances, and we failed to do so, which was extremely disappointing. But at the end of the day, we'll put it behind us because we know the stretch in front of us is key. We've got a lot of home games ahead of us, and that's we've always been looking forward to that.
Take us on the flight if you can, and I know you're not going to give away any state secrets, but are guys talking over what happened in the game, or are they trying to put it behind them as quickly as possible?
Yeah, I think, there's guys that have individual conversations about circumstances in the game, but I don't think there was a couple plays, at the end of it. The goal against was the most disappointing once we're up two men, because you should never give away a goal. It was a series of events that mistakes one after the other, probably five of them actually, that lead to the ball being in the back of the net. So I know the defenders and the group of guys just in general that probably had some discussions about that, as we did as a staff, and but the scoring part is we have to be sharper. You have a team that it's at 1-1 and they've got nine guys inside their box and just on the perimeter of their box. It's always going to be a little bit challenging, but we weren't just sharp enough in that. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think guys were embarrassed, as we all were, that we weren't able to come away with something out of that. But we're not going to spend too much time, getting caught up in it. Now we have a lot to play for in front of us, like I said, a lot of home games. So it was quiet, more quiet than usual, I would say. But I don't think there was I don't think it was necessarily any bad thing. I think it was just guys, reflecting and taking it all in.
In terms of not being able to score a goal against the nine-man team, is it as simple as saying the guys have never really – I mean, I can't imagine you guys do any sort of training exercises against a nine-man team at practice, but is it as simple as saying the guys have never really been in a situation like that and weren't sure quite how to deal with it?
Well, I mean, I think we do things that are numbers up and numbers down in training. Sometimes you do things that are 10 versus 8, but it's not that often. A lot of times, even in training sessions, if you're playing a 10 versus 8 and you have sort of two lines of four against, your 10 attacking group, it's still not easy to score because those eight players have one mission, which is to protect their goal. They don't really have any real desire or, they don't have the onus to have to try to attack you. So they don't really get spread out. They stay pretty compact. And so it's not easy, and you need some things you need to be very precise in your crosses, your shots. If you're taking them from outside of the box, you need to get through a lot of people without getting blocked. So they have to be precise. If you're putting things into the box, then guys have to find space where there isn't a lot of space. So it's not the easiest thing to do, but at the same time, you'd like to think that, over the amount of time we had it, that we could have got something, on goal. But again, for me, the disappointing side was giving away the goal. We should have walked away from there with at least one point.
Sebastian Giovinco's frustration has become increasingly evident. Are you okay with his body language? And are you also okay with him kind of going rogue and trying to take up much of the responsibility to himself?
Yeah, I mean, I think is the body language that people are seeing are that he's trying to figure out, where there's space, how to eliminate defenders, how to even not just sometimes open up himself, but how to open up other guys. And so, in terms of the body language, I think it's just a frustration thing. I think it'll come. And I think, as he finds the back of the net, as we as a team continue to create opportunities, those things will come. My thing with for Seba, for all of us, is that his chances too often are coming from outside of the 18. And we've got to do more. Sometimes I think we're settling for shots where maybe just one extra pass or a little run behind the back line and a ball slipped in between people can maybe get us a better look. And sometimes we're getting a little bit anxious to hit the shot too early. And we're also going to have to prove against teams that we can get around the outsides and get across the face of the goal as we did on the first goal, but we've got to do it more often and become dangerous so that we can open up the back lines. But, obviously Seba is natural. He's gone to several games now where he hasn't found the back of the net. So he's frustrated. Just as a group, though, and then that night was frustrating for everybody, to be honest, just because it was, you have the numbers up and you want to try to score a goal. So am I frustrated with him going rogue? No, I think all along, I don't think he's necessarily going rogue. I think he is searching for things. In the past, he has made plays that are sort of slightly outside of the scope of some of the things that we do for a team because he has that individual ability to make a play. And so I think he's still looking for those moments. I think the difference is he's not putting things in the back of the net, so it's becoming more obvious to people. I think he took those moments to try to take people on and to try to create things off the dribble and off of his own movements before, but we were having things come off of that, whether it was for him or someone else. And so then it was, well, at times I remember past people saying it was a one-man team, that's because he's capable of doing special things. So I don't think he's rogue. I think he's looking for to try to create, and he feels maybe with the absence of some of the guys that aren't with us that he needs to try to create a little bit more, which we all work with, and I have my own conversations with him just to continue to work with the team, and things will come naturally.
Toronto FC head coach Greg Vanney, our guest here on TFC Pitchside. The Jordan Hamilton substitution caught a lot of fans by surprise on Saturday. Was it a minutes restriction thing? I mean, you're down a goal at that time. At least to me, it seemed a bit odd to take off one of your attackers.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, would I have done it different? Maybe. My big thing was to get somebody in the box who could get up and create things, keep things alive, knock things down. I put on Mo, hoping that Mo would sort of be around Nick and be quick and look to pick up second balls. Nick was in there surely because of his heading ability and jumping ability, and I felt like we needed a presence in the box that could keep some things alive or maybe even turn some things on goal, even though it's his natural position. He is our best jumper and our best header in the box, and he is the most aggressive player that we have in terms of attacking things in the air. So it wasn't a traditional game. We needed a striker who could hold up things and connect things. I needed somebody in the box, or we needed somebody in the box who could really attack the ball in the air, because at that point in the game, we weren't going to get anything up the middle. We were only going to get things going around the outside and putting up crosses. So, you know, could Jordan have stayed on and give us that extra body? Maybe. I thought we also needed just quality of service, which is also part of the reason for Mo and sliding Jay in, was I thought at times we were getting a little bit impatient with our service, and the quality of the service wasn't good enough to give us even a real chance. So, you know, in hindsight, it's easy to say I would have done this or would have done that differently. But at the time, I felt like Jordan was getting a little bit fatigued. He wasn't really able to get loose from his man in the box. He wasn't finding a lot of space. And so we just tried to put fresh legs on to try to create something in and around the goal.
You're still fifth in the Eastern Conference and coming into an important four-game stretch. Is 10 points from this upcoming homestand a realistic goal? Because that's what seems like what needs to happen.
I don't know. I mean, to be fair, I haven't gone and said that we need X amount of points from, you know, the certain number of games. I haven't sat down to look at it in that way. My focus right now is on DC United, which is our next home game. Then I have, you know, we as a team have 8 more days to focus on the next game. So right now, priority one is getting results at home against DC United. And then within all of that is getting guys healthy and keeping guys healthy. Our mission right now is to take points, but to not lose anybody else to the injury list so that we can start to put our roster back together here for this final stretch. So, is it realistic? Maybe. I think as a team, when we're healthy and we're rested, then I think we can beat anybody on any day. And I think that's, you know, no different going into this weekend.
I know you don't want to make excuses, but 8 games in, I think it's 28 days is a lot for any team to take on, plus all the travel that's gone into that. On top of that, you add on all the different injuries into the squad and injuries to key players, Michael Bradley, Will Johnson, Clint Irwin. Is it an intangible quality that you miss with those guys? And also, I mean, you're just short on numbers, so you have all these games in such a short amount of time. I don't want to harp on the guys, but they do seem a little bit fatigued from this recent stretch.
Yeah, the summer in MLS is a grind if you have an entire roster, that's for sure. And no excuses for us, and especially no excuses for the weekend, because we should have taken something out of that. And we should have had a minimum of 5-point week, given how we started the weekend, the effort we put into Columbus. But yes, I mean, I could see as we were going into San Jose, it's I am trying to motivate and drive the team, because you can see that they're motivated, but inside you can tell that this group has been pushed thin over the last sort of month and a half. And so, you know, not having the full roster just means that a lot of guys have to go weekday in and day out, and the amount of travel going from where we go to Orlando and then back across the country and up to Vancouver, then back to Toronto, and then we went down to Columbus and then over to our most recent game. Where were we?
San Jose.
I mean, these things, they just, you can't help it. They add up. But as a team, we pride ourselves on being able to dig deep and come away with something out of each of these games. And so the thing that's great is a lot of guys who maybe otherwise in a full roster wouldn't have got the amount of minutes that they've gotten have had real opportunities and have stepped up and proven that they're viable in this league and viable to help this team. And so I think we've surprised people with our depth, especially some of our young guys being able to do what they've done. And that's going to make us better in the long haul. But, you know, at the same time, right now our focus too is just there's an intangible and there's a tangible, because, you know, some of the guys we're missing, they're top quality players. They're internationals. They're top guys in their positions around the league. And so we miss them, and that's a tangible thing. And we miss some of the intangible, which is the leadership and the veteran experience that they have as well. So, I mean, all those things add up over time for sure.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Allowing a soft goal, the second one was really soft by Alex Bono. Is it a confidence killer for a young keeper? And will you make a change moving forward?
You know, for me, Alex's mistake, if you will, was one of probably what I thought were 5 mistakes over the course of that play. And his just happened to be the last one, and he had the chance to put all of the other mistakes behind us by making a save. So, you know, for me, Alex, could he have done better on that? Yes. Is that a confidence killer? I'll tell you this week when he comes into training and he comes into preparing for this week, and we'll see. But I don't think so. I mean, I think he's a confident player. He's jumped into the goal and done a very solid and reasonable job, you know, over the past four or five games. So I have no real intention today to make any specific change. We'll see, you know, obviously time will tell, but for me, Alex has done a great job, and he made some saves earlier in that game that I thought were important to keep us in that game. Yes, that was a soft goal. Alex was the last one to make have an error, but there were four or five other errors leading up to that that put us in that position. And against eight guys, it's never one mistake that does you in. It's got to be compounded mistakes that lead to a goal.
Greg Vanney, our guest here on TFC Pitchside. One more quick one before we let you go. We know Josie was on the bench, and you said post-game you weren't tempted to use him and not to rush him back into the play. Could we see him on Saturday against DC? And is there any update on possible incomings as the transfer window is now open?
Very possible. You could see him on the weekend. You know, that's kind of always been in some ways our target. We've gone through a lot of things, and Josie's been working extremely hard, and that's always been our target. So he'll have a good week of training, as long as everything progresses the way we intend and hope. And you know, then we'd love to see him on Saturday. As far as incomings, we're definitely feeling things out, both internationally and within the league. And, you know, we have some space to work with. So it's just a matter of finding the right fit for our group that can help us down the stretch here.
Hey, Greg, we know it's your day off, and we really appreciate you doing this. Been a lot of travel for you guys lately, and we'll see you at training later this week. Thanks for doing this.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Take care.
There is the head coach of Toronto FC, Greg Vanney. And look, again, to bring back something that we discussed a little bit earlier. First of all, I know mid-season coaches pretty much in any sport don't work all that well. Leave the Pittsburgh Penguins out of this. I know that seems to work well for them, but they're kind of an anomaly.
Just stick with soccer. It does not work well.
And one bad result does not mean you should be firing a coach. This is one bad result. Okay, they have two wins in their last seven. It hasn't been great. They're still in a playoff spot, fifth in the Eastern Conference, about to go on a four-game homestand. And to me, again, this is a conversation we've had earlier. Injuries are not an excuse. They are a reason. And right now, TFC, outside of Sebastian Giovinco, they are missing their four best players.
Yeah, and to make a manager's change now, what happened to having confidence in who's there? Okay, you lost your confidence. Fine. Results aren't going your way. TFC fans complain about, you know, there's tactics and listening
tactics
to the coach. And
what tactics are there against a nine-man team, though?
Exactly. But more so, how do you basically make cohesion in the union? Listening to the manager, playing out a game plan time and time again, game after game, it's getting built. If you're going to sack the manager now, whatever work you just did, you're killing. And we're back to square one. So it doesn't matter if you think this guy is better than what we have now, what TFC has now. It doesn't matter. You can't make a managerial change now. It's death.
It's also, what are you bringing in? And we hear a report now on MLSsoccer.com. Jason Kreis probably going to sign up with Orlando. Things haven't been going well for them since they fired Adrian Heath. Things haven't been going well for Houston since they fired Owen Coyle. But Euro coaches don't normally work in MLS either. So
No. You
have to think about who would be the guy coming in.
Can TFC have one coach that lasts more than 2 years?
You have to give it Vanney at least till the end of the year.
I'm not wavering
from that opinion. I've had it for a long time.
Because what's the difference then? If you pull the trigger at the end of the year, you're in the same spot, you're rebuilding, but at least you have an offseason to do it.
A couple of notes again from the interview. Alex Bono, Greg Vanney saying, as of right now, Bono is going to be the starter on Saturday against DC United. We'll see how training goes, is pretty much what he said. And the other thing is, as you would expect, Vanney not sugarcoating it, but the team was embarrassed with the way that they played on Saturday night and with the lack of a result that shook out from that game. Just one last very thing on Greg Vanney. And UTFC trolls are somewhat fantastic sometimes in the creative ways that you think of doing things. But on Greg Vanney's Wikipedia page, personal life, Vanney is known for screwing many of the teams that he has played for and managed over and over again. At Chivas USA, Vanney and head coach Robin Fraser guided the team to a last place finish. And at Toronto FC, him and assistant coach Robin Fraser have been deploying useless tactics and losing matches that should have been won. In parentheses, CSJ Earthquakes 2-1 over TFC.
One game, and they ruin it like that.
Makes me laugh. I have little faith in humanity. And
don't call them trolls. Just call them morons.
Basically. And I know some TFC Twitter fans or Twitterers are better than others, and people on social media are going to be pretty vile most of the time.
Yeah, but if you have a compelling argument, make the argument.
I have heard from some people that were at TFC's coaching session that happened recently, and they were very impressed with how Greg Vanney runs his training sessions and does what he does as a head coach. And people like to throw out things, and they like to hurl names out there without knowing the whole story. And we are here lucky enough on TFC Pitch Side that we get to know a little bit more of the whole story. And that is why I stand pat with Greg Vanney should be the TFC coach from now and going forward this season.
At least to the end of the season.
Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. When we come back, MLS All-Star teams announced. And a little bit from Justin Morrow, who we talked to today as well. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitch Side.
Follow the guys on Twitter at Dan Riccio 590 and at Unfit Ref. Questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Hey, it's Drew Moore, and you're listening to TFC Pitch Side.
This was the night before we went to Columbus, Guns N' Roses in Pittsburgh. It was a great show. Hopefully some of you got to get to see it here in Toronto as well instead of watching TFC on Saturday night.
Did they play what you wanted them to play?
They did. They played the hits. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitch Side. Yes. In my ear,
yeah,
producer
too.
Emil Delich is referencing my drunken Snapchats. Basically, it's me taking Snapchats of Slash and in the background just yelling, "Oh my God, he's so good! Oh my God, he's shredding!" I guess, Dan, we can see
and hear
your Snapchat. So yeah, it was kind of
you were like a groupie.
Yeah, basically. All right, TFC Pitch Side. Thanks again to Greg Vanney for joining us today. MLS All Star Team announced. We'll get to Justin Morrow in just a second. To me, there's a couple of things that stand out, and I bet Michael Bradley's probably on the team. If he's not injured, that's more of him being a U.S. national team guy. But goalkeepers, do you think Clint Irwin makes it if he's not hurt, Thomas?
How can he not, given who made it ahead of him?
David Bingham?
Yeah.
Andre Blake is first ballot for sure.
Easily.
Nick Raimondo has been hurt a lot this season, right?
Easily the starter, Andre Blake.
Yeah,
easily. He's the best goalkeeper in the MLS.
As it stands in MLS.
Listen, okay? Stop yanking my chain, all right?
Sebastian Giovinco
is don't have that much time.
Lone TFC player. Didier Drogba is on the team. We're not quite sure why, because he's not been very good for Montreal this year. Also, Lawrence Simon is on the team, and Kendall Waston of the Vancouver Whitecaps. All right, so Justin Morrow does this amazing thing, and it's for the second year in a row, including a summer reading program for grade 7 and 8 students at St. Margaret's Public School and Eastview Public School. So Morrow was visiting students today, and our producer, Emil Delich, had a chance to catch up with them at this great little event that Justin Morrow holds now yearly with TFC.
Yeah, well, I created the program. It was something that I was doing in San Jose, and actually right before I got traded, I had the whole program set. And then when I got traded, the program kind of went away because I was gone. And so it's something nice that I was able to translate and bring here to Toronto. And last year was my first year doing the book club, and it's great that we were able to get out here again and do it again.
Okay, so you were mentioning some of your favorite books and some of the books that you've been really into and reading for the second time around. Mm-hmm. What made you kind of go back and get into reading again, you know, later on in your life?
I think it was just something where now where I'm a professional athlete, I have tons more time in the afternoons where I'm able to go sit down and spend the time to read a book and actually get through the book, as opposed to where I'm in school and there's books that I have to read. You know, there was different things that I've been interested in that I've been able to read about through books.
You were a Big East all-academic in high school, also all-academic all-star. So this was obviously instilled in you at a very young age that education is very, very important. Mm-hmm. How does that transcend onto the pitch from the classroom?
Right. You know, all the reading that I do now outside of practice when I'm in my free time, it helps me stay concentrated on the pitch. It helps me to keep my focus. And like you said, it's something that I've been doing all throughout my life, you know, all throughout school. It's something, education has been something that's important to me. And so now that I'm not around that environment where, you know, I'm being forced to study things and read things now, it's nice to be able to choose what I want to read and really put my time into that.
We've got a lot of guys in the locker room who, you know, some guys love the fashion, some guys love the music. You got asked about what was your favorite hip-hop artist, favorite rapper. He's with Jay-Z.
Well, just along that lines, I really like Jay-Z. The kids asked me about who my favorite rapper was, and that's because I read his book Decoded, and that book talks a little bit about, you know, where he came from, his background, and it actually has some lyrics from his raps in there, and it just goes through the lyrics and describes what it's about and where he was coming from in that song. So I think that was something really unique where he was able to really relate to his fans in a different way that not other rappers are doing. So I thought that was really cool.
Are you giving Decoded to Jonathan Osorio?
I haven't yet, but I can, yeah.
I also got it. It's a great book. It's a good book. Yeah. Out of curiosity, your goalkeepers, interesting mixes here with Bono and Clint Irwin. Clint Irwin's actually he's a novelist almost. Wrote a little piece in Toronto Star. Yeah. What are you giving a guy like that, you know, someone who's already got a head up on everything?
I'm not sure what I give him. I know he's always into something, you know, road trips. He's always got a book, and he's a well-studied, well-read man, so... I'd like to see what he has for me.
You were talking about you used to do this in San Jose. Is this something you can continue doing during your MLS career and as you kind of carry on? Is this something that's very, very important to you?
Absolutely. It's something that's important to me. It's, you know, reading is a passion of mine, and I'm able to share that with the kids through this book club. It's a great way to relate to the community, a different way to relate to the community than the stuff that we normally do. So I'm really passionate about it, and I'm happy that I'm able to do it.
What are your top three all-time books? Tough question, but hey, gotta ask it.
Anything in the Harry Potter series is I put up there. I love that series. It's one of the series that really when I was young got me into reading. So
How do you feel about books that are turned into movies? Are you a fan of that kind of thing?
Yeah, I love that. I think it's a great way to, you know, compare the two, and it's a great way to get into reading because, you know, I think everyone loves an intriguing movie, and so a lot of times people don't know that movies start off as books, and so I think it's a great way to get into reading.
Is there something that you really wanted to see turned into a movie that you've kind of gotten into?
No, nothing yet. Nothing that jumps off the top of my head, but I love it.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it.
There it is. Thanks again to Justin Morrow talking with our producer, Emil Delich. What would you give Alex Bono after this gaffe that he had on Saturday night in San Jose?
Give him as to read?
Yeah.
Crime and Punishment.
That's fair. I don't know if that's fair, actually. But
it's the first book that came to my head.
Well done. We're not. You're supposed to be a novelist, Thomas. I thought you were. Disappointed in you a little bit.
I'm writing a book right now.
If you haven't seen the TIFO in Portland Saturday for their game, or was it yesterday? It was yesterday, Sunday, against Seattle. It was kind of incredible. So get out there. Maybe we'll tweet it out at Dan Riccio 590 as well. Take a breather, guys. We hope this was a little bit of catharsis for you. You heard from Greg Vanney. Hopefully he answered some of your questions. I believe he did. And back at it Saturday. This is a massive, massive stretch for TFC. Four straight games at home. First one with DC United Saturday night. Dan Riccio.
And use your head.
Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, Emil Delich. This has been TFC Pitch Talk.
I stepped outside the backstage door to breathe some nicotine and maybe check my mailbox, see if I can read the screen. Then I heard a click, the stage door lock. I knew just what that meant. I'm gonna have to walk around the block if I wanna get in. A wristband, my man, you got to have a wristband. If you don't have a wristband, my man, you don't get through the door. Wristband, my man, you got to have a wristband.